the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program. This episode of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is brought to you by ShakePay. It's the easiest way to do the Bitcoin dance in Canada. ShakePay is giving right now $30 for every $100 in if you use our referral code CBP, that's Charlie Beta Peter. On top of that, if you use our referral code, you can also shake your phone in the app every day and have ShakePay give you a little bit of Bitcoin on the house. And of course, they also have a Bitcoin-backed debit card. So add the card to your Apple Wallet or Google Wallet, and you can use that card to spend the money you were going to spend anyway and get a couple of Satoshis back. It's a great way to add to your Bitcoin stack. Again, you can use our promo code. It's in the description, and it is CBP. Friends and enemies, welcome to another Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, Nooner, where Len and I can't get another person for the bedroom week over week. My name is Joey, and in the other panel, an embarrassed co-host. What's going on, buddy?
To be fair, we never did invite anybody, so everything is great over here, Joey. Hopefully everything's good over there as well.
Yeah, it's good, man. I just got back from taking my pup for a walk here, so my hair's a little unruly. My dog is tired on the deck. He'll probably want to come in the middle of the show like usual, but good to rip here. We got some quality midweek content, as usual.
Yeah, and you know what? Good weather as well. I'm not sure if you're experiencing what we're experiencing over here, but it's, you know, 14, 15 Celsius, around 60-ish, I think, in Fahrenheit. And so it's not bad at all. I wish it was like this every day in winter time. So absorb it, you know, do what you can and have fun. And it's going to be very cold in a not too distant future, unfortunately. So anyway, let's just go on. A couple of things I want to talk about today. Jerome Powell yesterday was on the tube or on YouTube or where the heck he watched him. And he was just jabbering about this and that, including the fact that he acknowledged that inflation would be around for a little bit more than he expected. And, you know, obviously he talked about in the past, transitory is no longer here. Persistent is in vogue these days. And it looks like he came to this conclusion around Labor Day 2021. I don't know how he took so long to come to this conclusion, but, you know, we have an admission from him that, you know, he acknowledges that it's no longer transitory. And he also mentioned several times and you know, this being the latest yesterday, that the rate hikes are imminent and this is going to be required to combat inflation. And there are hopes that they're going to do three different 0.25% increases by the end of 2022. That's a lot, three in 1 year. That's a freaking ton of increases to their rates. But nonetheless, he's talking about stimulus packages that will be wrapping up sooner than planned. We'll see what happens. The monthly assets purchase will be winding down at a faster pace than originally they had in their game plan. I think they were saying by March 2022, they're going to be winding this down. That's freaking fast. And that's going to have a huge impact on the market and the government's balance sheet. He's talking about, this is kind of funny. He's hoping that inflation will run 2.6% next year, which is an increase of 2.2% that they were originally projecting back in September. And then they're thinking it's going to fall back to 2.3% in 2023 and 2.1% in 2024. There's no freaking way this is going to happen. 2.6% next year? No way. If I'm a betting man, I'm going to put all my sats in the fact it's going to be an over, not an under. He's vastly underestimating the inflation unless they do some really hardcore manipulation to the calculations. And to go back to the rate hikes, you know, he's talking about maybe three potential rate hikes next year. I have a feeling, Joey, and maybe you're going to grill me on this one, but we might have one, just one rate hike. And I think that's probably, if I'm going to bet on anything, that's probably what's going to happen. And he's probably talking up a big game. You know, we're going to have three different rate hikes next year, trying to prep the markets and everything, but then ultimately come up with just a single one because they kind of tested the waters and realized it's not all rosy, just trying to raise rates to try to stem inflation. So I think they are going to have one. And also there's another variable. You have how much influence you're going to have from the White House. You know, Janet Yellen is probably at Jay Powell's ear telling him what to do, because, you know, we do have the midterm slated next year, November 2022. And, you know, if there's talk about the House or the Senate, you know, the Senate's already lost for Democrats, but if the House might be lost as well, who knows, there could be a lot more pressure coming about to see what could be done to ensure that things are done smoothly enough that the people don't feel the pinch with the rate hikes, and they want to ensure that the economy runs as smoothly as possible. The markets go, you know, at the same pace it's going right now. So there's a lot of different variables, but Joey, if I'm a betting man, I'm going to go with just one rate hike next year. Just one.
Jerome, like he must realize that the stuff he says is the most soundbiteable bit of content for the entire Twitter sphere for a week. For sure, the first 24 hours, but I would say a week after that, everyone's talking about what he says. So I was watching the FOMC conference yesterday and looking at a couple of tweets. As always, Zero Hedge has just a steady dose of quotables from Jerome. So he's got a few good ones in here. Powell, yes, we won't raise rates until after the taper is finished. Okay. That on their timeline, they finish in March. Yes. April, I guess, right? The end of March 2022, April. And so he says how many rate hikes? Three.
Three. Mm-hmm.
They're going to raise three times in 8 months. That's mm-hmm. what he thinks is going to happen. Zero chance that happens. That's an absolute zero. You can take your house to the bank and bet that you're not going to get three rate hikes next year in the United States. I personally would have a little bit of money riding on zero rate hikes, but that's my decision. Second quotable, no decision on the timing gap between the taper ending and the rate hike beginning. So now he's leaving himself room even more on the side of rates not going up at the rate that he's predicting, no pun intended there, three hikes in a year, because that sort of implies that he may wait a little longer after the taper to see what the market's reaction is, of course, right? As he has wanted to do in the past. Powell says returning to higher inflation participation may take longer. He also says Fed could hike before reaching maximum employment. I think there's a lot of word games going on here. I think he's very careful in things he says. He says conditions that align with full employment. He says maximum employment, but he never says what those things are, what the difference is. Is full employment the same as maximum employment, the same as conditions aligned with full employment? These things are all over the place. And so I don't know what he really means when he talks about these sorts of things. And I think that's on purpose. I don't know how, if you're an investor or someone who sort of hangs on the every word, the every eyebrow twitch of Jerome Powell when he gets in front of these mics, how you would invest on this information. Now, even better, FOMC rate projections don't represent a plan. Then what are we talking about? These are his words. They're not my words. Okay. So if the Free and Open Markets Committee doesn't represent, you know, if their projections don't represent a plan, then what do they represent, Len? What are they?
It's just
tweeting stream of consciousness. Like, what the fuck are we talking about here? It's either those projections are an intention to deliver or they're nothing. So if they're not an intention to deliver, i.e. a plan, then I would say they're nothing. And I don't understand why you even bother coming out with this stuff. Powell says after Labor Day, it became clear inflation was more persistent, but I guess not before. You'll remember those Joe Biden tweets about how your Labor Day picnic would be less expensive this year if you bought vanilla ice cream or something. Probably not going to get that tweet next year, Len. I don't know what you think about that.
I highly doubt it.
I expect you're not going to get that 20 cents cheaper this year. And then, you know, of course, we talk about the quit rate, the great resignation, you know, one of the best labor indicators. So basically he's saying there, like, don't look at the participation rate. Okay. That one's not important. Look at all the other metrics we're bringing in, but not the participation rate. This whole conference, man, was nuts. And I also think that he had a couple of Freudian slips. I'm not going to pull up my own Twitter feed because it'll take me too long to find the tweet. I'm addicted to the platform. But the thing I noticed yesterday is he said that they're prepared for the inflation that's to come. He didn't say and then he pulled it back. He kind of stuttered and said, I mean, the plausible set of outcomes that we might experience or whatever, right? These guys, man, again, you would think that with trillions coming off the printer, that they would have enough money to get this guy into a Toastmasters class before they put him up in front of cameras to dictate where the next 6 months of the global economy is going to go. But they just don't seem to want to do it. And so instead, you get these questions from press members. And there was a lot of good questions yesterday from names I didn't recognize about what I thought was the important thing, this full employment, maximum employment, and conditions, you know, aligned with maximum employment or whatever that term was. What do these things mean? What do they mean for policy? And what do they mean for forward guidance? What is the percentage of people who needs to be working for you to be at maximum employment? Seems to me that it's changing all the time. There's, you know, obviously we talked about the shell game between people looking for work, not looking for work, and all these different things. I think there's going to be, like I mentioned on the flagship show this week, a shift in the definition of what work really is. And I would not be surprised, Len, if to go along with this rate hike, what you saw was some kind of loan forgiveness program from Biden leading into the midterms. Because it seems to me that the only way to, you know, quote unquote, rate hike rates is to forgive people who are going to be destroyed by the hike. And so even if he does it, and this is, you know, I'm coming off my position of no rate hikes a little bit here, but I don't think pragmatically this is really that different. If you eliminate some of the debt for people who would be hurt by the rate hike, what is the rate hike really doing? It's just window dressing, right? And I think that that's very much possible. You've seen in the last little while, you know, last 72 hours, we'll say, maybe 96 hours, 3-4 days, a push on Twitter on Biden's promise to alleviate $10K in student debt for people, for example. And now that, you know, as we mentioned a few weeks ago, the debt repayment plan is coming back into view here, and the date is kind of, you know, on the calendar, not so far out. People are starting to think about that promise and how it wasn't kept. And with midterms coming up and, you know, the virus that shall not be named sort of reappearing in liberal states, only liberal states, I should mention, it's very careful to only appear in liberal states. This is an issue that his administration will have to tackle at some point, because those same states that are worried about case counts, you know, are also worried about a lot of other left-leaning causes and campaign promises that really at the time were geared around debt forgiveness. There's a ton of talk about debt forgiveness and it hasn't materialized. Will it materialize, Len, as at the same time that rates go up? Shit, it might. And it would be at, you know, sort of a nil, a balancing act between the two, right? So pragmatically, you wouldn't really be hiking rates, but that remains to be seen. That's all speculation on my part. I don't know. Overall, what would you give the speech in terms of clarity and, you know, steady handedness out of 10?
Okay, for clarity, I cannot give you an answer because I didn't listen to the whole thing. I only listened to clips and I read what I had heard on the news. I don't know.
Stocks ripped right after, right? So how steady-handed was it?
Bitcoin went up too. I mean, everything kind of, I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me even to answer the second question because I don't know. What do you think?
I think that steady-handedness, his ability to deliver succinctly the points without looking flustered, I thought he was a 6, maybe a 7. And I thought for, you know, sort of the clarity on forward guidance, it's damn near zero. It's damn near zero. He's talking about predicting out rate hikes and whatnot. And he's talking about what the dot plot is suggesting is going to happen. And then the next minute he's saying the dot plot is not a plan. This is a zero. And I am dying to see how this turns out, because now that I think this is probably the most people that have paid attention to an FOMC across all investing spheres, whether it's Bitcoin, DeFi, crypto, traditional equities, bond vigilantes, people who want the whole world to end, people who think that all the bears are overboard and the doomslingers are going to be proven wrong. It doesn't matter where you fall on that spectrum. I think everyone was watching this because now it's in the zeitgeist, as we've discussed before. Even the normie, the lowest rung normie, knows that Powell is talking about inflation just by looking at his Twitter app. And I think that's enough for them to really start thinking about the way they deliver. And for them, thinking about the way they deliver is, it just means we can't say anything, but we have to give them something. And that's what you saw yesterday, I think.
Joey, do you in the least bit feel sorry for him when you see him? Because that's something Absolutely. Else.
Oh my God, yeah.
That's
oh
something
God,
else. Yeah. I mean, it kind of clouds my judgment of a lot of things because those two questions kind of, it's hard for me to answer because I feel really sorry for this man for going up there. And you got to figure, like, leading up to this, it must have been torturous for him.
Yeah.
You know, he must have been sleepless nights and so forth. I can't imagine him wanting to go ahead and stand in front of the camera every time. And you know, he's going to get grilled by people that are directly asking him questions, but also by the media behind the scenes that are writing and also the Twitterverse, et cetera. That's one thing. I'm trying to humanize this as well, but I'm not trying to overlook the fact that he has a very important position, but I feel sorry for him as a man.
There's nothing wrong with trying to humanize it. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right.
And I look at him, you know, when I saw him yesterday, and I thought, and it, actually I wrote in that our chat, he's aged a lot in the last 20 months or so, 21 months, a lot more than a lot of other people have. And there's a reason for that. I mean, he's under a lot of stress and he's under a lot of pressure. So I'm not trying to give him a pass. Let's be honest. You still have to deliver regardless of where you are. But in the end, I still pity the man. I really do. And I hope somehow in the end he comes away from all this whole exercise here. He still has his sanity and he doesn't, and his health isn't compromised. That's my, you know, I hope that's the case.
Jerome looks pretty, he looks pretty rugged. I think that when you look at his renomination from the Powell administration, the Biden administration, instead of Baird, right? Like, you know, the knock on him for the Baird supporters was that he wasn't dovish enough. And to me, I think you look at his renomination, you look at the speech he gave yesterday and the speeches he's given in the past, you know, now he's got basically, you know, I wouldn't call it a mandate, quote unquote, but it's clear that Powell and Biden see eye to eye on what the Federal Reserve should be doing as far as its role in economic recovery. And I think more importantly, and also unwritten, its role in achieving reelection for the Democrats. There's, you know, nay a wise person left who thinks that there's arm's length between these two institutions anymore. And I think that it's very clear there's not arm's length between the two of them. When you hear Powell discuss things like racial inequality and weather. But, you know, that aside, you're right. I think it's fair to humanize the guy because I think that guy's in a tough spot. He's been put in a tough spot by a lot of different things that have a lot of different causes. And, you know, we talked about them sort of sparingly on the show to protect our own channel, but, you know, we all know what they are. And I'm sure he's got a spinning head just like the rest of us. And he's trying to stay on a swivel as best he can. But let's be honest, you know, are there more or less moving pieces to this puzzle than there was in March 2020? I think there's significantly more moving pieces now. And, he's really got to juggle these things in a way that he didn't have to in 2020, because some of the terminology and language that he and his colleagues were using, stuff like transitory, you know, which again, for the Bitcoin crowd, never hit, it never really stuck. But for a lot of people, it did. It's gone now. You know, you don't have a helmet on anymore. You're sort of front of the pack here. And there's, you know, the enemy troops are at the gate. You better have something to tell them, and it better make enough sense that it holds them off, but it better not be direct and predictive enough that they can tell you were wrong and it affects your reputation down the line. Like I said, he is the most important guy on the planet when he's in front of the microphone. There is no doubt about that. And, you know, to be at the mercy of whether or not he can deliver a succinct point to a question he presumably hasn't heard, you know, leading up to the conference, the press conference, it's a lot to ask of anybody. You know, I wouldn't want to do it. That's for sure. So I'm with you on the humanizing thing.
Yeah, it's not like they're asking Nancy Pelosi about separating people from investing. And you see, she paused, drank her water. I won't go too far. Anyways, let's move on, Joey. Let's move on. Some very big news came out yesterday. So the 15th of December, Ledin, actually, they raised another $70 million, which then essentially values their company around $540 million. And Maurizio Di Bartolomeo, their co-founder, said since inception, Ledin has processed over $450 million in loans. And 90% of these are occurring in 2021. So that's a lot that's been done just this year. 90% of the 450,000 isn't done in 2021. That's incredible. So it shows you that the service is ramping up. They now have over 100,000 registered clients in 127 countries. That's a 10x growth from Q3 2020. And they have $1.7 billion under assets. But this is not the big thing. The big thing is they're going to be piloting a Bitcoin-backed mortgage service, and this is expected to roll out to Canadian and US clients in 2022. Right now it's kind of in a pilot stage, but it's going to roll out on a more global level sometime in 2022. And it looks like that they are kind of operating like a bank, but they're not really a regulated one. But they have applied to the Ontario Security Commissions to be registered as an investment dealer in all jurisdictions in Canada. So they're doing the right thing to be registered, and they are making themselves to be more bank-like. And in the end, I could just say this, Coinbase, you could just fucking suck it. because, you know, we have now Ledin, which appears to be better. Not appears. It is fucking better. Let's be perfectly frank. They're Canadian. They deal only in Bitcoin and USDC. And so they're far and away the better provider of services than is Coinbase. Although Coinbase does sell coins, and Ledin doesn't really do so, but there's some overlap between the two. And to go back to the Bitcoin-backed mortgage, I can give you a little more insight on that. Right now, there's a waiting list. If you go to the Ledin website, you actually just apply and put your name on the waiting list. And it also mentions it's introducing the world's first Bitcoin-backed mortgage, and you can own your home and keep your coin. And so with this Bitcoin-backed mortgage, you could use your holdings of Bitcoin to buy new property or finance a home you already own. So it's not only for new homes, it's also applicable for current homeowners. And you get an equal amount of your Bitcoin holdings without selling anything. That's incredible. And they're going to be extending this loan to 100% of the value of your Bitcoin, and by accepting both your Bitcoin and real estate as joint collateral. And both the Bitcoin and the property value will be accepted as collateral, as I just mentioned. And it's really, really interesting. It's they're not going to be selective in how they're going to be selecting clients, because new and existing homeowners will be able to take advantage. The length of the term is 2 years. And at the end of the 2 years, you could potentially renew. There are going to be regular monthly interest payments that need to be done. The interest rates will be adjusted according to the market, but they will be lower than the interest rates on Ledin's dollar loan program and their B2X. And I took a look right now before to show how much is that the interest rates on the loans and B2X, 9.5% APY. So on the surface, this might seem rather steep, but keep in mind that those who have a large stack of Bitcoin and really nothing else, this may be the only way for them to enter into the homeownership club. And it won't force you to liquidate your Bitcoin and be subjected to capital tax gains. And it's really a way for you to keep your Bitcoin and eventually get it back, all the while keeping that number go up mentality. So you'll get to take advantage of the increase in Bitcoin. Hopefully it goes up over time. So you're not losing it through the whole process of borrowing against to buy a home. So all in all, this is really good stuff. Ledin is paving the path for a lot of new people to get into the homeownership market by using their Bitcoin. This is crazy stuff, Joey.
Can we take a victory lap, or should we wait? Did we not say this? Have I not been saying this for 6 months? Eventually, there will come a product that allows homeownership for people who have Bitcoin holdings that banks do not recognize as valuable. Guess what? Now you got to start playing this game if you're a bank, because you're losing business to people like Ledin and their eventual competitors. This is outstanding. It's outstanding. There are still people who are my age and younger that think Bitcoin is a scam or a Ponzi and is going to be made illegal or disappear. You got to be smooth brained to think that, watching the developments in something as TradFi as home ownership lending getting eaten up by Bitcoin. This is only a matter of time before people who have 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 in Bitcoin over the last few years. Okay. These kids who, by the way, you know, we're, and this is another thing I'll talk about in a sec, but these kids who were quick to try and make fiat gains by trading shit coins, you know, by trading shit coins for God only knows what other tokens, just to try and get a house or get an apartment or make a down payment or whatever, right? These kids now are going to stay in Bitcoin or move to Bitcoin from these garbage tokens, because guess what? Ledin isn't going to recognize your Shiba or your Aave or your Solana or your ETH. They're going to recognize your Bitcoin. And, you know, they may go down that road with Ethereum maybe at some point. But, you know, if you're an Ethereum guy, this is another question I have for you. What is it going to take before you realize that Bitcoin is the thing that's driving the ship, driving the market? It's not Ethereum. There's not going to be a flipping, okay? These altcoins are going to slowly bleed to zero because of services like this. Because if you want to use your assets, you know, the bank is going to let you buy a house, or Ledin is going to let you buy a house with Bitcoin. They're not going to let you do it with one of these bottom 100 or top, you know, even though, let's say it's, you know, between 10 and 100 on CoinMarketCap, they're not going to let you do it. But these guys will let you use Bitcoin. And again, you know, we've been saying this for a long time, Len. So once again, we kind of had a crystal ball on this, but it wasn't really that hard to put the pieces together. Home ownership among youth is down. Savings accounts balances are down. No one has equities positions because they got crazy student loans, but there's a lot of kids under 30 who hit it big on Bitcoin in the last 10 years. And those kids want to use it. They don't want to sell it. They don't want to give it up. So here's how you do that. You use Ledent and you get a home. You start your family, you do whatever. Very much in line with the Bitcoin ethos. And I am pumped that this is, I think, uniquely Canadian. Am I right about that? I don't think BlockFi has a service like this.
It says it's a world first. So I don't know if anywhere else, unless I read amazing. That incorrectly. So
it's amazing.
And you're talking about people in like having other tokens, perhaps like even ETH. You got to remember people that have something like ETH, they can't get out of it because the gas fees are too high. Unless you have millions of dollars worth of ETH, you're stuck in it because the gas fees are just extraordinarily high. So that's another
part of
thing.
Part of it. Yeah, it's all good news, man. And Ledin, like, okay, obviously Mario has been on the show a bunch. He's a friend of ours. We do the spaces together and he's got an open invite whenever he wants. They don't sponsor the program. Okay. We don't have to use Ledin. We both do. We were both convinced that it was reasonable to do so with some portion of our stack. And, you know, you're going to have a hard time telling me now that these guys are not a net positive on the space with stuff like this going on in the background. And I don't know about you, Len. I can't wait till they go public, which is inevitable at this point. I'm definitely going to be buying some stock in those guys.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to happen. And yeah, maybe I'll get a stack once it goes live. But lately I've been waiting a few days, maybe a little bit longer after the IPO. We wait for the hype to die down.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely I'm going to be getting a chunk of this one once it goes
amazing.
Live. So yeah.
It's amazing.
It's great stuff. And you know what? It just goes to show you that there's opportunity with Bitcoin to expand your wealth, to improve your life. And yeah, companies like Ledin, they give us the opportunity without selling our stack. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
It's very valuable. That's it for the Nooner today. Mm-hmm. Len and I have our usual Monday rip next week. And a special Wednesday night stream coming as well, 7 p.m. So be aware, we're going to have a little bit of fun that night.
Yeah, so if I could just add some color to that one, Joey. So it's for the people that only listen to the audio side of things, we're going to be doing a live video. We do live anyways on Monday nights, but the Wednesday night one, it's going to be live on YouTube. I strongly encourage you to tune in. It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, if you don't have anything better to do, most of you guys would be off work that Thursday anyway. Bring a few beers. I'm planning on bringing a few beers, breaking my own rules, drinking during the week.
Wednesday.
Yeah. No, I'm saying if you're off on Thursday, you don't have to worry about what you drink on Wednesday night.
Okay. Gotcha. Sorry. Yeah. Go nuts. But it's 7 p.m. Eastern. We're planning
7 p.m. start. Yeah. We might be on the stream a little before that, but the episode itself will start 7 p.m. I don't know what you and me are going to do, Len. Maybe we'll hop on a little before because we usually do Q&A after. Maybe we'll do Q&A before instead. I can't be up all night.
We'll have to discuss the logistics after, Joey. So
yeah.
If you're not there, you may potentially be my no coiner of the week, so you better show up.
We'll see you guys then.
Take care.